Depending on where you live, the rioting that has been taking place in the early days of April in Northern Ireland is something you've either heard a lot about or not at all. For a few brief nights, there was a lot of concern that the violence was going to escalate. Luckily, it hasn't, and hopefully will not happen. It's also important to remember that this was a very small group of youths involved in the violence. It is in no way a representation of the majority of people in Northern Ireland. But it did take a lot to get to this point, and I feel that many are finding it hard to understand the complicated context surrounding it. That's where this episode comes in. In this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about the Good Friday Agreement, what life in Northern Ireland has been like since the agreement, the impact of Brexit, the Northern Irish Protocol, coronavirus, and how all of these things culminated with the rioting that occurred. It might still be a bit early to write this, as it's an ongoing situation, and I will put out another episode if an update is needed, but I do feel a lot of people are asking me questions, and I'd like to do my best to answer them. On that note, please remember, the Troubles podcast is an introduction to the Troubles. I do a lot of research into these episodes, but I do encourage you to dig deeper, as there is an abundance of information out there. I'm just trying to get them all together in one place, and as concisely as possible. So let's get into it then. This is the Troubles podcast, a podcast which explores the violence and bloodshed that occurred in Northern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, and Great Britain, as multiple sides and organisations waged a conflict over the status of Northern Ireland. We're going to begin with the Good Friday Agreement, which is also known as the Belfast Agreement. The Good Friday Agreement was signed on April the 10th, 1988, and it came into effect on December 2nd, 1999. This was a hugely important moment in Northern Irish history, and it was this agreement that heralded in the end of the Troubles, which had been raging for around 35 years, killing, maiming, and traumatising hundreds of thousands of people. The agreement was split up into two documents, one being a multi-party document between most of Northern Ireland's political parties, and the other was an international agreement between the United Kingdom and the Republic of Ireland. The agreement acknowledged two things. For one, the majority of people in Northern Ireland wanted to remain a part of the United Kingdom. The second point was that a substantial number of people in Northern Ireland and the majority of people in the Republic of Ireland wanted to bring about a united Ireland. The Good Friday Agreement was also the first time that the Irish government acknowledged a binding international agreement that Northern Ireland was a part of the United Kingdom, as opposed to just an occupied territory. The agreement said that this was binding until the majority of people in Northern Ireland wished otherwise. Here's British Prime Minister Tony Blair and Irish Taoiseach Bertie Ahern talking about the signing of the agreement.
The principle of consent is absolute and is throughout the agreement. And the breakthrough is that that is now accepted by all, North and South. Also, those who believe in a united Ireland can make that case now by persuasion, not violence or threats.
My ultimate political aspiration remains the coming together of all the people of Ireland, achieved peacefully and by consent. I value deeply the close relationship between the Irish government and the British government. But I look forward equally to a new era of friendship and reconciliation between unionists and nationalists, in which each tradition can learn truly the value of the other.
After the signing of the agreement, Northern Irish people could also call themselves British or Irish, and they could hold either passport. They could also freely move between Northern Ireland, into the Republic of Ireland, and into Great Britain. There's a lot more I could say here, and I'd probably have to devote a full episode to the Good Friday Agreement, but that is the basic bones of what the agreement stated. There was also a lot covered in the agreement, including sovereignty, civil and cultural rights, decommissioning of weapons, demilitarisation, justice and policing. It's around this point I need to bring in the political parties involved in the agreement. On the nationalist side, there was the SDLP, the Socialist, Democratic and Labour Party. And then there was Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin is a party that is closely identified as being aligned with the IRA. This has always been a major issue, but I'll get back to that later. On the unionist side, there was the Ulster Unionist Party, or UUP, who were the dominant party in Northern Ireland during the Troubles. But their popularity faded as they tried to work with and support other nationalist parties. There was also the Progressive Unionist Party, or PUP, who were linked with the paramilitary Ulster Volunteer Force, and the Ulster Democratic Party, who had ties with the paramilitary Ulster Defence Association. There's another important Unionist Party, the Democratic Unionist Party, or DUP. This is the party that was founded by Ian Paisley and would be considered socially conservative. They see themselves as defending Britishness and Ulster Protestant culture against Irish nationalism. The DUP were very strongly against the Good Friday Agreement and were the only political party in Northern Ireland to oppose it. So why did they oppose it? One of the terms of the Good Friday Agreement was the release of nearly all paramilitary prisoners on both sides of the conflict. The DUP were very heavily against this. But I feel like the most important factor, and one that has continued to be a sticking point with the DUP, is that they found it very hard to separate Sinn Féin from the Provisional IRA. They flat out refused to work with the people they perceived to have killed their friends and family. They did eventually commit to working with Sinn Féin with the signing of the St Andrews Agreement after talks in October 2006. Again, I'd advise you to read more into it, but we'll keep going from here. The Good Friday Agreement was not perfect, but it stopped the bombs. But in the decades since it was signed, significant cracks that were there at the beginning have only started to deepen. One of the major problems is that the agreement didn't do much to unify an incredibly divided country. It instead allowed for the creation of two quite distinct camps, of Unionists and Nationalists. And in the past 30 years, support for the parties who lay politically in the middle, such as the UUP and SDLP, has dwindled, while support for Sinn Féin and the DUP has grown. The terms of the Good Friday Agreement also stated that instead of one political party being in charge, the largest Nationalist party would share power with the largest Unionist political party. As of writing in 2021, the two largest parties in Northern Ireland are the DUP and Sinn Féin, and they have been attempting to work together since 2007. But it has been a very bumpy road, which featured plenty of breakdowns in talks and devolutions of governments. Arlene Foster of the DUP took the reins as First Minister in 2016, sharing power with Martin McGuinness of Sinn Féin. This government collapsed in 2017 after a power-sharing scandal. McGuinness resigned in protest to how the DUP handled a green energy scheme.
Over this period, the actions of the British government and the DUP, in my opinion, have grievously undermined the institutions and have eroded public confidence. So we in Sinn Féin will not tolerate the arrogance of Arlene Foster and the DUP.
The Assembly then remained collapsed for 3 years and finally reopened in January 2020, with the DUP's Arlene Foster leading with Sinn Féin's Michelle O'Neill. Though the deadlock was long and dragged out, people were hopeful that the two women could work together for the good of Northern Ireland, especially with the arrival of Brexit. But this has really not been the case. Since the Good Friday Agreement was signed, life in Northern Ireland has been mostly peaceful. When compared with the Troubles, things have drastically improved, but there has always still been the ominous threat of violence. Some ex-paramilitaries completely stopped the violence, some joined political parties, and some turned to a life of crime. There have still been paramilitary-style killings, but on a much smaller scale and with significantly fewer civilian casualties. The Provisional IRA was disbanded, replaced by the Real IRA, and the Loyalist UVF decommissioned their weapons, but continued to exist on a much smaller scale. In the political world, the DUP and Sinn Féin have had a lot of difficulty working together. There were a few nights of rioting in Belfast in 2011, instigated by the UVF. There was also more rioting in 2012 and 2013, because the Belfast City Council voted to limit the days that the Union flag, which is the flag of the United Kingdom, flies from Belfast City Hall, from 365 days a year down to 18 days. This concession was supported by the Nationalist parties, but met with fierce opposition from Unionist parties, who perceived this to be a cultural war against Britishness in Northern Ireland.
They'll not stop until the flag is back up, and they don't care how long it's going to take. It's pointless, the violence is pointless, but that seems to be the only way to get through. And no matter what we do...
But that does sound a bit like it's justifying violence.
It is, but
Well, you can't justify violence, can you?
No. There's no justifying violence, but... that seems to be the only way to get through to.
There was also rioting for a few days in 2015 and also 2019. On the 18th of April 2019, journalist Lyra McKee was covering police raids in Derry when she was struck by a bullet. She was brought to the hospital and later died of her wounds. It is believed that she was killed by dissident Republicans, and she was the first journalist killed in Northern Ireland since 2001, and it deeply shocked the people of Northern Ireland. It's now I should talk about Brexit. On June 23rd, 2016, 52% of British voters voted for the United Kingdom to leave the European Union. I won't spend too long talking about Brexit, but the UK wanted to be independent of the EU's policies, and there was also a lingering fear that by being a part of Europe, more immigrants fleeing countries could seek asylum in Britain. So what does Brexit mean? Well, Britain has left the European Union. It is no longer to take advantage of free travel from one country to the next. I'm from the Republic of Ireland, and as a European Union member, I can travel freely to any other country in the European Union without getting a visa. On mainland Britain, where Scotland, Wales and England are all connected by a land border, leaving the European Union can be done without too much complication. But Northern Ireland is different. It is connected to the Republic of Ireland, but it is now no longer part of the European Union. So to travel from Northern Ireland to the Republic of Ireland, or vice versa, should, in theory, require a passport check at an actual border control area, because one country is a part of the European Union and the other isn't. In reality, no one wants a hard border, and it contradicts one of the agreements that came out of the Good Friday Agreement, which is free travel. And after 35 years of violence and bloodshed during the Troubles, nobody wants to go back to a tightly controlled area again. This issue became a sticking point during negotiations between Britain and the European Union. So to secure a successful Brexit, Britain needed to figure out a way out of this border problem. So why exactly was this a problem? There are many, many, many reasons, but one of the most significant ones is in relation to the importation of goods. The European Union has strict laws on food markets and exports, and all food that is transported within Europe has to adhere to these laws. All of the countries in the European Union are part of a single market, and they require any goods coming in from the outside this single market to be inspected before they enter. So how could goods coming from Britain be inspected before they arrive into Northern Ireland and then be transported to the Republic of Ireland if there was no border control? This wasn't an issue before Brexit, when everybody was in the European Union, but now it is a major one. After lengthy negotiations and after a failed backstop, the Northern Ireland Protocol was agreed on. There is a lot to it, and it is incredibly complicated, but I'll be focusing on the bare bones of it. The Northern Ireland Protocol has introduced a sea border between the islands of Ireland and Britain. So when goods such as meat, fish or eggs arrive into Northern Irish ports, they are checked there to make sure they meet the standards of the European Union. That's roughly where we are now. But this protocol has deeply, deeply upset some unionists in Northern Ireland. They don't want Northern Ireland to be treated differently than the rest of the UK. And they see this Irish sea border as doing just that. Some unionists feel that their sense of identity is being eroded by this protocol. Quote, "The Brexit deal has cut Northern Ireland adrift from the rest of the UK, pushing Belfast further away from London and paving the way for an economic United Ireland." There have also been graffiti and threats made to port workers in Northern Ireland, intimidating them from working so as to prevent the customs checks from going ahead. And there's at least one case of a family having to move after they've been scared out of their homes. The DUP is strongly opposed to the Northern Ireland Protocol and announced in early 2021 that they wanted to unite unionism to campaign against it. Here's Arlene Foster calling for an end to the protocol.
I've been saying for some time now that right across the unionist community, people are very angry, very concerned about the protocol, about the way in which the Belfast Agreement has been interpreted, both by the Irish government, by Brussels, and indeed, sadly, by London as well. People need to listen to what we're saying. They need to take heed of what is being said by the unionist community, and I hope that the message has been heard in London and in Dublin and Brussels, because we need to deal with this issue and deal with it quickly. And look, I'm very clear. I want Stormont to succeed. I want devolution to succeed. But there has to be a recognition in London, Dublin and Brussels that damage has been done by this protocol, and therefore we have to deal with it. Belfast Agreement is about consensus. There is not one unionist politician that thinks this protocol should stay.
The Loyalist Community Council is a group which represents Loyalist paramilitaries such as the UVF. In 2021, they publicly announced that they were temporarily withdrawing their support for the Good Friday Agreement as a result of the protocol. Its chairperson, David Campbell, told BBC Radio Ulster, quote, "If it comes to the bit where we have to fight to maintain our freedoms within the United Kingdom, then so be it." Okay, that's been a bit of a heavy information dump, so let's just pause and see where we are now. We have the Good Friday Agreement and its flaws. Then we have what Northern Ireland has been like since then, and we also have a small part explaining Brexit and the Northern Ireland Protocol. All of this should be considered when we talk about recent events, starting with coronavirus. COVID-19 swept across the world in 2020 and led to lockdowns in Northern Ireland starting in March. Like any other country, Northern Ireland was heavily affected by coronavirus, with pubs, shops and schools closing intermittently throughout the year. There was also some very strict measures applied for weddings and funerals and other public events. Bobby Storey was a Northern Irish man who was a key member of the Provisional IRA. He was considered the head of intelligence for them in the 90s and had also taken part in a number of other IRA operations. I've actually talked about him before on this podcast, as he was one of the key members organising the Mays prison escape back in season 1. Nationalists considered him a hero for his role throughout the Troubles. He passed away on the 21st of June 2020, and between 1,500 to 2,000 people lined the streets of Belfast to allow his funeral cortege to pass. Included in this crowd was Michelle O'Neill, who was the vice leader of Sinn Féin and was power-sharing with the DUP's Arlene Foster. This was the time when the COVID regulations set by the government said that no more than 30 people could gather outside. A crowd of 1,500 to 2,000 people gathering during these strict lockdowns was seen a slap in the face to many. And some unionists perceived this military-style funeral as a show of force. And as well as that, Mary Lou MacDonald, who was the leader of Sinn Féin in the Republic of Ireland, also travelled up to take part in the funeral. People were further incensed as Michelle O'Neill was there, essentially contravening the rules that she helped set. The aftermath of this funeral caused a significant public backlash, and Arlene Foster called for Michelle O'Neill's resignation, saying that she could not stand beside O'Neill to give out public health advice after what had happened. She said, quote, "The Storey funeral fundamentally undermined the Northern Ireland executive's COVID-19 rules and confused our messaging. The public messaging was significantly undermined as a result of the attendance at the funeral by those who make the law and the regulations. It is right that the Deputy First Minister has acknowledged this undermining of the public messaging as a result of what happened, and the deep hurt and anger that was caused as a result of Michelle O'Neill's action. Those who set the rules must abide by the rules." End quote. Initially, O'Neill defended herself, saying, quote, "If the regulations had prevented me from attending his funeral, I would have obeyed those regulations." But later on in the year, she acknowledged that the government's public health message was undermined by her actions. O'Neill eventually issued an apology stating, "I do accept that the public messaging about the pandemic has been undermined by the controversy over the last number of months. It was never my intention that that would happen, but it did, and I regret that. So I want to rebuild trust with the public, as we have the most challenging time ahead of us." The Police Service of Northern Ireland, or PSNI, launched an investigation into the COVID breach at Bobby Storey's funeral, and on March 30th, 2021, they announced that they would not be prosecuting anyone in relation to the funeral. One of the reasons to not prosecute was, quote, "a lack of clarity and coherence within the regulations and the prior engagement between organisers and the police." So essentially, the organisers thought they were not breaking the rules, and the police acknowledged that the message at the time might have been perceived as being unclear. In the wake of the announcement, O'Neill gave a speech, reiterating her apology.
I wish to again say it today and to put on the public record that I am truly sorry for the hurt that has been caused to so many families who have lost a loved one during this time. My attendance at the funeral of Bobby Storey was to support a family during their grief as he was laid to rest. Over the past 9 months, I have worked tirelessly to rebuild trust and confidence with the public as a result of undermining the public health message. I am truly sorry that my actions have contributed to the grief or the heartache that has been felt and experienced by many people who've lost a loved one during this pandemic. That was never, ever my intention. And for that, I offer my heartfelt and unreserved apology to those families that have lost a loved one. I take very seriously my responsibility as a public office holder and as Deputy First Minister and Joint Head of Government. The events of that day were investigated by the police, with whom I gave, as you would expect, my full cooperation. The report published on the 30th of March by the PPS set out its judgment, which was made independently and impartially by the team of senior prosecutors assisted by senior counsel. I now understand a review of that judgment has now been requested, and I'll await the outcome of that. Nevertheless, it is unfortunate that this matter has divided the executive and the assembly that many of us worked so hard to bring about and to restore in order to get on with delivering public services to the public with whom, to whom we serve.
This decision was met with harsh criticism from the DUP, and Arlene Foster called for the head of the PSNI, Simon Byrne, to step down, claiming that the PSNI is operating on a two-tier system and that they are biased in favour of the nationalists. In the eyes of many unionists, the funeral for a man who used to be a member of the Provisional IRA was also a show of force of those who were committed to the cause of nationalism, and the police not prosecuting any of them meant that the integrity of the police was compromised. It was this decision not to prosecute anyone who attended the funeral of Bobby Storey that led to the rioting that took place in the early days of April 2021. Things kicked off on March 30th in the city of Derry. The rioting began in the unionist area of the Tully Alley estate. Petrol bombs were thrown at police and a nursing home was also attacked. There were 4 nights of rioting, with loyalist youths attacking police. Then on April 7th, a bus was set on fire in Belfast City, and loyalist and nationalist youths then began throwing petrol bombs over a peace wall at each other. A peace wall is a wall dividing two communities of loyalist and nationalist. As is the problem with narratives, both sides claim that the other was the instigator and that they were defending themselves. It's very important for each side to claim that the other was the aggressor. From the vast majority of news articles I've read, it does seem like that the rioting was instigated by loyalist youths. And there was one startling video showing older people cheering them on and supporting them. On April 8th, the rioting continued, and the police had to deploy water cannons for the first time in years. The final day of the rioting was on April 9th, and a number of loyalist leaders urged the community to stand down as a mark of respect to the death of Prince Philip. Just for clarity's sake, this podcast is being recorded in the middle of April, so it's unsure how the rest of the month will pan out. But it looks like things have calmed down in the area. By the end of the rioting, around 80 policemen were injured and a number of youths were arrested for their part. I do want to again say, this was a very small amount of youths rioting. It has been picked up by the world media recently, who want to blow it up into something it's not. Yes, it is the worst rioting that has been seen in about 5 or 6 years, but it was mainly young teenagers who were taking part that have never experienced the horror of the Troubles. There have been accusations that both nationalist and loyalist youths were being spurred on by older generations, but these haven't been proven. Arlene Foster released a statement condemning the violence. Here she is speaking about it.
The scenes we have seen over this last evening and in previous evenings in various parts of Northern Ireland are totally unacceptable. There can be no place in our society for violence or the threat of violence, and it must stop. Just as it was wrong in the past and was never justified, so it is wrong now and cannot be justified. The injury to frontline officers, victims terrorised, damage to people's property, the harm to Northern Ireland's image in this our centenary year has taken us backwards. And no brick, no bottle, no petrol bomb thrown has achieved or can ever achieve anything but destruction, harm and fear. Rioting, criminality and wanton destruction destroys lives, livelihoods and brings fear and misery to local communities. It is not in the name of the people who live in the areas impacted, and I have spoken to some of those people and it's certainly not in their name.
Here's Sinn Féin's Michelle O'Neill speaking about the violence as well.
As political leaders, we must stand united in appealing to all concerned to refrain from further threats or use of violence and recognise that it's only through democratic politics that we can solve our problems and concerns, and call on those together, call on those organising young people to engage in violence to stop, and to those young people themselves to call on them to exercise restraint. Nobody could fail to be alarmed by the fact that these are young people, children as young as 13, barely a teenager, that are involved in rioting, both at Sandy Row and then last night again, similar scenes at Lanark Way. It's not right, it's dangerous, it's unacceptable, and it is a miracle that as we stand here today that no one has been killed.
I wanted to make this episode just to give a context on how one thing led to the next and so on and so forth. The unionist population of Northern Ireland are continuing to feel pushed into a corner. And this border in the Irish Sea, as a result of the Northern Irish Protocol, makes them feel like they're even further disconnected from Great Britain. As of writing, the situation is by no means resolved, and it's quite unclear if the protocol will remain. One thing is certain, though. Nobody wants to return to the darkest days of the Troubles. Thanks. See you next time. As always, I hope you've been enjoying this season, and if you want to support the podcast, you can do so over at patreon.com/thetroublespodcast. There you'll get early access to episodes, ad-free episodes, and I'll also be posting a lot of media related to the Troubles. I'll also be posting a companion video to each episode I publish. If you'd prefer to make a once-off donation instead, you can do so over at buymeacoffee.com/troublespodcast. Another way to help is to leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It all helps.